In this primary election season, candidates have more money staying power than ever before.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Mitt Romney is celebrating his second win in as many state contests. But even after success in Iowa last week and New Hampshire last night, the former Massachusetts governor still has plenty of competition. And even those who didn't do so well are still around because of unlimited money coming in from independent political action committees called super PACs. Marketplace Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale explains.
Despite back-to-back wins in Iowa and New Hampshire, Mitt Romney still faces five contenders for the GOP nomination, and that may be largely due to the money from super PACs, even though they're supposed to remain independent of political campaigns. Larry Sabato with the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia says unlimited financial support is why even the last-place finishers in New Hampshire are staying in the race.
You don't drop out until you run out of money. Super PACs ensure that most of these candidates won't run out of money nearly as quickly as they would have in the old days when they had to depend on small direct contributions.
Super PAC advertising has dominated the campaign so far, according to New Hampshire GOP strategist Patrick Griffin.
The Romney Super PAC literally took 20 points out of Newt Gingrich's hide in about 20 days.
Still, a single $5 million super PAC contribution has given Newt Gingrich the chance to fight back in the next primary in South Carolina. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. Markets are lower right now, anywhere from, 0.2% or less. Actually, the NASDAQ just turned into positive territory, but the Dow is off. Still 22 points at 12,439. Hostess Brands today filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The maker of Twinkies and Ho-Hos just emerged from bankruptcy last September, 3 months ago. Word today out of China, 150 workers at a factory that makes iPhones all threatened to jump from the top of the building if they didn't get a raise. Those workers at the Foxconn plant did get a raise. This is the same company that got a lot of press over the past few years for a rash of worker suicides. But these aren't the only workers protesting work conditions and pay in China. The global economic downturn there means increased pressure on workers, and as Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports now.
The sad reality in China is that threatening to kill yourself is becoming a common tactic among factory and construction workers who want a raise. What's sadder, says China Labor Bulletin's Jeffrey Crothell, is that many workers are prepared to go through with it.
Workers are finding their wages getting cut back. They're being working less overtime, which, you know, you might think is a good thing, right? But workers on the minimum wage absolutely depend on overtime pay to make a living wage.
Migrant workers in Shanghai stand for hours in the cold, hoping to get train tickets home for the upcoming Chinese New Year holiday. Construction worker Cao Xiaobin says he feels the pressure, too.
The price of food is going up much faster than my salary. If this continues, I don't know how I'm going to be able to afford to live.
Some Chinese cities are trying to tackle the problem. The southern metropolis of Shenzhen just raised its minimum wage to around $230 a month. China Labor Bulletin's Crothell says that's simply not enough to live on in urban China. The thing is, Shenzhen now has the highest minimum wage in the entire country. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Progressive Insurance with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at progressive.com. And by GoToMeeting by Citrix, bringing high-definition video conferencing to online meetings for face-to-face collaboration. More at GoToMeeting.com.
Well, in Iraq this week, roadside bombs killed one person and injured more than a dozen others. Security forces there are fighting to keep order after the vast majority of U.S. troops left last month. Christopher Hill is former ambassador to Iraq and U.S. Assistant Secretary of State, where he helped negotiate with North Korea over nuclear weapons ambitions. And he's with us now to talk about the economic futures of both countries. Ambassador Hill, thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Now, we've seen some violence in Iraq of late, ever since American troops pulled out of Iraq in December. What does that mean, do you think, for the country's economic future?
Well, first of all, I think the country has a pretty good economic future. As you know, they opened these oil service leases to the international oil companies, including with Exxon and BP and Shell. There are a lot of companies in there doing big infrastructure projects, including oil pipeline deals, highways, etc. The problem with the country is they have never sorted out this Sunni-Shia rift. It's a country where the Sunni world meets the Shia world, and it hasn't been easy to sort out.
Oil exports, of course, is Iraq's economy. That's what it's all about. Is there, do you think, a more diversified economy down the pike?
Well, I think there certainly is. I mean, in terms of Middle East agriculture, I think Iraq has really something to offer. But under Saddam Hussein, like just about everything else, that also kind of atrophied. For now, I think the economy is very oil-focused, but in the longer run, I think you'll see it more diversified.
You spent a lot of time in North Korea to lead the U.S. delegation aimed at solving this nuclear crisis. And how do you think that the economy will fare under Kim Jong-un?
The Chinese are always suggesting to the North Koreans, you've got to do what we did, which is open up the economy, get foreign investors in. The North Koreans, I think, are pretty reluctant to do that. And they're reluctant because as soon as North Koreans see what is out there, they'll see that there's a lot better world out there, and that would be the end of this funny little country. So I wish, for the sake of those 22 million people, that they too had a kind of North Korean spring.
Chris Hill is the former ambassador to Iraq. Ambassador Hill, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And finally this morning, a New York City woman who wanted to get out of going to work faces forgery charges. She was arrested this week and charged with concocting a jury duty summons she'd given her boss. But the boss noticed the summons was rife with spelling errors, which clued him in that the supposed court document was fake. Trial was spelled trail, T-R-A-I-L. Manager was spelled manger. You'd think she'd be a better speller since the woman is a school teacher. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
It's expensive to run a political campaign. There's staff and ads don't come cheap, but be that as it may, money is still no guarantee.
I tell candidates, it's always better to be the candidate with the most money, but you can win without it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Money and Politics a la Freakonomics. The numbers from Wall Street as well. That's next time on Marketplace. It's from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.